It's showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday, wherever you may be. Overtime is clocking in at 6:02. Tanner Carson, Julia Ramsey, Cole McCormick, live from the Fan Run Studios here, getting set to take you up until 8 o'clock tonight, per usual here. How's everyone doing today? How's everyone's day been so far?
Not too shabby, Tanner.
Not bad. Pretty good so far. What about you, Tanner?
I feel like I'm still trying to readjust.
Okay.
I really still feel like I'm trying to readjust to like my normal routine.
Okay.
And my normal schedule, because, you know, being on a farm for almost a week, it's going to mess you up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I took it really easy today. I was able to get some things done around the house. My folks have gone camping in the Smokies, so
okay.
It's just me and two of my dogs at
the house
always all
nice.
Week. So I mean that is nice, but I had to take care of stuff around the house. I finally washed my Bonnaroo clothes.
Okay,
they may need another wash. Not sure, but I was able to get that taken care of. I'm going to do a couple more loads of laundry tonight.
Second wash is always a good idea.
I may have to do it. I haven't considered doing the burning them route though.
Yeah.
I haven't done that,
but yeah, I was able to get that done, take care of some other chores around the house, but really just took it easy a little bit today, trying to get back into everything. It just feels weird being normal. I don't know why. Does that sound odd? Because that's how I feel.
I get that.
I'm glad you get that.
I think that's how most people feel when they get back from like a big vacation. It takes them a couple days to adjust.
Yeah, it wasn't just a vacation for me though. It was like combined vacation and like out of body experience, I guess.
Oh.
So it's definitely something to kind of readjust to here, but I'm getting back into it here. I was a little late coming into the show yesterday, but I'm here on time, back in the hosting chair. Cole McCormick doesn't have to bounce producer and host duties for a segment. So, we'll try to get everything back to normal. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Sounds great to me. College World Series going on right now, by the way. A lot of rain up there in Omaha, Nebraska. Three SEC teams that were playing today were affected. The middle of the Louisville-Auburn game has been delayed right now, trying to get the inning right here. But Louisville, actually, with a 4-1 lead over Auburn when this thing was called to a halt. What is the inning here? I called it to a halt in top of the fifth. Or bottom of I think in the middle of the fifth is when they called this one here. So in the middle of that one, so waiting on that one to get back in action. That is a very crucial game. That is an elimination game. Auburn, of course, Julia, you mentioned it yesterday, didn't do themselves any favors against Mississippi State.
Nope.
Really shot themselves in the foot at the end of that one.
Kind of blew it.
Allowing Mississippi State to walk off. The aforementioned Mississippi State Bulldogs, later tonight, whenever, or it could be tomorrow, depending on how bad this weather is. I haven't really looked at the radar up there, though. But they're slated to take on Vanderbilt. So you have that intra-SEC matchup going to go on sometime. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow, who knows. Man, that's a titanic matchup right there. Vanderbilt 55-11, Mississippi State. I've kind of really forgotten how great they've been this year. 52-13.
They're very good.
Two elite clubs from the SEC going at it here. Yeah, I think Vanderbilt's still the favorite to take that one. But the two games today, both postponed for rain. I know that's the big event around this time that draws all the spectators up there to Nebraska. Man, I would love to live in a city where something like that was going on, wouldn't you? Love to live around Omaha.
Cool. It'd be pretty cool.
It also kind of sucks, though, that if you're like a Nebraska fan that lives up there, if you're, I know Creighton's in Omaha and they have an okay baseball team, they like never make it.
Right.
They never make it to the tournament, in the national championship tournament that's in their own backyard.
Yeah, so they're probably kind of tired of it.
It'd be like having a national title series in like Nashville or something like that. We just never, ever qualify for it. That'd be very, very frustrating. We kind of have something like that going on, though, with the SEC tournament in a way.
Yeah.
You just can never win it. Can never get it. So I understand how frustrating it is. And everything else going on right now, either of you, in my absence, talked anything about the Women's World Cup? Like Team USA, anything like that?
I mean, we mentioned their big win last week.
Oh, my. That was over Thailand. Oh, my.
Goals, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, they're not in action until Thursday.
I don't think we even mentioned yesterday that they beat
Chile.
Chile.
Yeah, 3-0.
Yep.
So next on the docket for them Thursday, they're taking on Sweden. Very good team in Sweden, by the way. So that's going on right now. Other than that, I mean, it's really one of those things where you had hockey and baseball and 2 days in a row, and now comes the time where you kind of hit that sports lull. That always happens in mid-June, goes on to really – when do we say this ends? I mean, it really technically ends when college football starts back, but I say college football season really, when it comes to the hype and everything, starts, I think, SEC Media Days, which we're less than a month away right now. But with that comes prediction season as well, list season. Want to run through this a little bit here. We're getting to that point to where let's start breaking down some of the schedule. Let's start talking about some wins here. Let's see what type of publications, what they see for Tennessee football in the upcoming season here. Good friend of the station, Dan Harrelson of Vols Wire. He put out this piece today talking about how Tennessee, according to, let's see, the College Football News, Pete Fiatak?
That last name's a tough one.
That's a funky name right there.
Yeah, it is.
Old Pete of College Football News, though, he's already churning out his predictions here. And how about this? Mr. Pete of the College Football News has predicted Tennessee to win 8 games.
I like it.
8 games in 2019. Huge step up for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols here. Analyzing the 2019 schedule, like I said, 8 wins. I'm assuming 8 regular season wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that.
That's what he says.
So 8-4.
Article, yeah.
Okay, 8-4, man. It's just like 8-4 is always that magic, like year two, man, we just get to 8-4.
That's like the over the hump number.
Yeah.
That is, it's, you know, especially in year two right now, we're not talking about Butch Jones with the talent that he had at his disposal in 2015, 2016 going 8-4. We're talking about, hey, this year two right here, get everything started back up again. Get people around here really, really excited about Tennessee football again, because it's not to say that there won't be excitement come August. There won't be some hype. There's always – it's just natural. We fall into it like a cycle all the time. But when it comes for, like, real hype, real excitement about a lot of wins, you don't have that. And, I mean, why should we? It's been a lot of disappointment to get used to. But if you come out and do that 8-4, Cole, like you said, that's the over the hill number. It's obviously better than your 6-6, your 7-5. If you do that, it's like, well, okay, you get to a bowl game, but, you know, should you have done better? Mm-hmm. Could you have done better? And then when you talk about, oh, if Tennessee goes 7-5, does that mean one of those 7 include a big upset win? Does that include beating Mississippi State? Does that include doing some of the unthinkable and beating Georgia? Going to Florida and winning in the Swamp, perhaps. Something really crazy like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And does that 5 also include another loss to Vanderbilt? Does that include a loss to South Carolina?
Yeah.
Start thinking about that. 8-4, man. What you got now, that's a happy number.
It is.
Yep. It's a very happy number. Let's see what Mr. Pete Fiatak? I think it might be Fiatak.
I think so, too. I don't know.
Fiatak. Pete Fiatak. 8 wins, 2019, he says. This is a snippet from his analysis of Tennessee's schedule. He writes, BYU is good, but if Tennessee is going to be anything decent, it has to take down the Cougars in Knoxville on the way to a 3-0 start. Talking about that very crucial BYU game, I think the most crucial of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to agree.
Yeah. Look, I know for pride's sake, really beating Vanderbilt's the most crucial one because you do have a 3-game losing streak to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, save your pride. But week two, though, man, that's big.
Yeah.
That is so big. I don't think anyone's underestimating how big that is, and I think the closer that one gets, especially once the season actually gets here, a lot of eyes, a lot of attention is going to be on that BYU game.
Sure.
He continues by going on talking about going to Florida and Alabama are almost two sure losses, and if one of them isn't, it's gravy. And going to Kentucky and Missouri won't be easy, but that's it. 8 games are at home. There's a week off to get ready for Georgia, and throw in a winnable game against UAB into the equation for a base of 4 victories among the non-conference battles. Assume a win over Vanderbilt at home to close out the regular season. We can't assume a win over Vanderbilt.
Not anymore.
As much as that just makes me want to go. It just makes me want to be sick to my stomach saying you can't really assume those anymore. Continues on, he says, at least a split against Mississippi State and South Carolina at home, and throw in a road win over Kentucky or Mizzou, and this will be the proverbial step forward the program so desperately needs.
You ain't lying.
I agree with pretty much everything he's saying. I agree that Alabama and Florida are pretty much guaranteed losses. I agree with that. I agree that the BYU game is going to be very important. I think it's going to set the tone for the entire season. You win it, you feel pretty good about the rest of the season. You lose it, may not make a bowl game again. Let's see, what else does he say? Kentucky, Missouri, I think those could be difficult in a way because they are on the road. I would say Missouri more than Kentucky. I think Missouri has more talent than Kentucky does. And I'm not scared of going to Kroger Field. I'm not scared of going to Lexington.
Oh, you're telling me you're not afraid of that coal whistle?
No, I'm not.
They blow on third downs?
No. No. If Tennessee could beat Kentucky last year, why can't we beat them this year? That's all I'm saying.
That doesn't strike fear into your heart.
It doesn't. No. It does get annoying. It does get annoying, but no, not fear.
BBN's about to walk out of the mines and whoop your ass is what that's saying.
Well, yeah. split a game against Mississippi State and South Carolina. I agree with that. I think they will. So, yeah, everything he says here, I really agree with. I thought it was interesting that he didn't say whether or not the Georgia was definitely a loss or if Tennessee had a chance. All he said was a week off to get ready for Georgia.
That's something that's actually surprising. He throws Alabama and Florida as two sure losses of course Alabama should be, and going to the Swamp is most likely going to be a loss.
I think if
not throwing Georgia in there, though.
I think if Tennessee didn't have the week off before that game, he probably would have lumped them in with Alabama and Florida. But since you have an extra week to prepare for them for a home game, it makes sense.
Can you really count that many teams out coming off a bye week playing at home?
No.
No.
When, of course, Georgia is the superior team, but it's not like, you know, it's comparing a Power 5 school to an FCS program after a bye week type of thing. You're in the same conference. You have serviceable talent at most positions for Tennessee. Shouldn't count them out. I mean, look what almost happened in 2013. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. That wasn't even coming off a bye. My bad. Coming off a bye after that, you beat South Carolina, a borderline top 10 team.
I mean, look what they did coming off a bye last year.
Yeah.
Beat Auburn. Yeah, I mean, so. Pruitt knows how to use his byes, apparently.
The bye week can be overrated at some points, but it can be part of the perfect storm to have an upset.
Yeah.
Like you said, Auburn, you have Tennessee coming off a bye week. They were on the road, sure, but you're playing at 11 a.m. local kickoff time. A team that had already been going through some locker room issues at that point. Not a lot of trust in their starting quarterback, and you saw what happened.
Perfect storm.
So anything can be a recipe like that. If you want to look at this, Pete Fiutak actually has like a big five-part little breakdown here. It's a big 2019 Tennessee preview. Once again, it's on the College Football News. I won't go through all of it because it is a lot. I'm going to touch on this too before I get to his season breakdown, exactly where he sees wins or losses. So he has a section here on the top Tennessee players, broke them down into offense and defense. It's a top five here. The best Tennessee offensive player, guess who he has as Tennessee's best offensive player?
Trey Smith?
Nope.
Ty Chandler?
Yes. It's Ty Chandler. He writes about Mr. Chandler. There will once again be a shared workload with Tim Jordan, but the 5'11", 201-pound Chandler is the better of the two. No, let's not call him Alvin Kamara, but he's fast enough to work in a variety of ways, return kicks, and be used even more in the passing game. He led the team with 630 yards and four scores, caught 19 passes with three touchdowns, and has the flash to change games around when he gets the chance. No, he's not a workhorse, but he needs the ball a whole lot more.
I'd agree.
2 through 5 here. Number 2, Garantano. 3, Marquez Callaway. 4, Darnell Wright. Even before he's taken the snap. Even before he wasn't even early enrollee.
Wow. There's a lot of hype around him.
Number 5 is Wanya Morris. So 4 and 5 best offensive players are 2 offensive linemen who haven't taken a snap. He does put an asterisk here. Note, if Trey Smith is healthy, he's number 1.
Yeah,
I'd agree.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
How about no Juwan Jennings there?
That is interesting.
Sure, Juwan's not the flashiest receiver. He doesn't have the greatest stats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his legacy is really more for the – it's the quality, not the quantity of the plays that he has made. But he's a damn consistent receiver, though.
He is, yeah.
And he's your veteran out there. Let's not discount that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's number 1 through 5. Defensive players, real quick. Best defensive player, go.
Taylor.
Daryl Taylor.
Nope.
Batuli.
Who do you say, Julia?
Da-da-da-da.
You can agree with Cole. It's okay. It's Daniel Batuli.
Batuli.
This could easily change in a hurry with several rising stars on the Vols defense, but the 6'3", 243-pound Batuli is a veteran main man on the inside of the linebacking core who's the most reliable parts of the puzzle. He led the team with 79 tackles with a sack and 6.5 tackles for loss after coming up with 90 stops as a sophomore. Versatile, he can play anywhere in the four-man core and produce.
Mm.
2 through 5 on the defense. 2. Kind of shot me here. Nigel Warrior.
Really?
I don't know if I would agree with that.
I don't.
I think I would. Oh, I disagree with this defensive list right here. Okay, Pete, me and you have to have a talk. Bryce Thompson is not on the top 5.
He obviously didn't watch any games of ours last year.
Yeah.
Number 3 is Daryl Taylor.
Okay.
I would definitely put Taylor at either 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 4 is. Oh, Pete, what are you doing, man? This was just 2 weeks ago. But I don't think he's got the news. He's got Darren Kirkland at number 4.
Oh,
Pete, have you not paid attention, man?
No, obviously not.
So he has a guy on here that's not even going to play football anymore. Okay. That's nice. Number 5, if eligible, Aubrey Solomon.
If eligible, I would bump up Solomon more than 5, honestly.
Yeah. I can see that.
Okay, sure. Since Darren Kirkland's retired from football, let's put Bryce Thompson in there.
Okay.
Just to put him in there.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
If Solomon is eligible, I'd put him at 2 instead of Warrior for sure.
We'll get into the schedule breakdown on the other side real quick here. I love season prediction time. I love analysis time. We're getting into that and a whole lot more on Overtime today. 865-546-8200, 546-8200. If you'd like to chime in on the Fan Run phone lines, we got to hit the first break of the program and be back with more after this. You're listening to Fan Run Radio. Back on Overtime here, continuing this discussion on this college football news piece here from Pete Fiutak. Still don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but whatever. That's what I'm going with. That's his name for now, at least. I don't care how your name's actually pronounced.
That's good enough for me.
That's your name right now, Pete. Sorry about that. Talked about him breaking down both sides of the ball here. And now, we already told you at the start of the show, in case you missed it, that he's got a lot of faith in Pruitt's second year. 8 wins he is calling. Now, he doesn't have a detailed breakdown about what's going to be the win or the loss here. He's just throwing some hypotheticals like Tennessee will split South Carolina, Mississippi State one way. They're going to lose at Florida. They're going to lose at Alabama. Get one on the road between Kentucky and Missouri. Beat Vanderbilt. Go undefeated non-conference. You're going to find yourself some 8 wins. He continues on talking about Tennessee this year and what's going to happen. He said, all Tennessee had to do in the first season under Pruitt was beat Vanderbilt to go bowling. The Vols still had major problems on the lines. They turned the ball over way too often, and the defense melted down way too much, considering the coaching staff and talent in place, giving up 40 points or more four times and 38 in the bowl or go-home game against the Commodores. But they still were knocking on the door of a postseason game.
Mm-hmm.
This year's team has the experience in all areas to be a whole lot better in a big hurry. Pruitt is bringing in the talent to help find some instant answers, starting with the offensive line this year. And he's got the skill guys in place to quickly bump up the SEC's worst offense. The defensive side should be stronger with a little time and a little luck. Needing some new parts on the defensive front three to be eligible and ready right out of the box. And the kicking game will be solid, so set the regular season win total at 8.
Wow.
I'm very, very confident there, I must say.
He is. I mean, I don't know how much of this you can really bank on because, as we found out just a few minutes ago, Darren Kirkland is one of the best defensive players on the team this year.
Even according to him, even though he's
not on the team
and retired from ever playing football again.
So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, but he is. He's very confident. I like it. He's a lot more confident than I am. I would love to be at 8-4, but I'm just not. I've told myself that way too many times and have been disappointed, so until I see it, I don't know if I can do it, but I do. I like the confidence. I really do.
By the way, I think I have a pronunciation guide.
Okay.
Oh, I got a text in that somebody looked up a video of him talking. Literally pronounced F-U-tack.
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 Like F-U.
Okay.
But tack on F-U-tack.
Okay.
Pete F-U-tack. Well, thank you, Mr. F-U. Appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it there. But, yeah, man, it's weird seeing a lot of confidence here from
Times. He's not the only person that has said that either. There was somebody a couple weeks ago who said the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy from 247. I can't remember his name. I'll see if I can find it. But, yeah, he's not the first person to say 8-4, which, I mean, bring it on. I mean, really, give it to me right now.
I'll take that every day of the week.
I will sign on the dotted line. I will take it 100 times over. But I mean, we've seen it before, so I just don't see it changing until it does. Until they show me, I don't see it changing.
To get to 8 regular season wins, you're obviously, it goes without saying, going to have the upsets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think about, man, what would have to click more? Would it be making sure, like he talked about in this piece, the defense melted down at a lot of times last season. There's a lot of games you just allow way too many points.
Mm-hmm.
You look gassed at so many opportunities. You obviously have a very, very good overall staff on that defensive side of the ball. And you got your more experienced players on that side of the ball as well. Mm-hmm. Are you breaking in a whole new defensive line? Yeah. But the pieces that you should be on that line are pretty good players.
Yeah. They are.
You do have to wait and see what they do, but I'm pretty confident in them, though. Is it going to be the defense that's more important, or is it going to be the offense? And let's not talk about Garantano for a second now. Everything starts up front in those trenches. Is it more important for your brand-new faces on that offensive line to go ahead and show that they are five-star caliber?
More important than what?
Is it offense or defense? That's what I'm saying.
Oh, the more important?
That's what I'm saying, like specifically your offensive line. That's what I'm thinking is going to be most important unit on your offense.
I would probably say the offense is a little more important because like he said in his piece, we had the worst offense in the league last year. And if we didn't, I think if our offense was a little better last year, we probably would have won – at least one more game, we probably would have won that South Carolina game that, in my opinion, we should have won regardless. But if the offense last year was a little bit better, I think we win that one, maybe another one. But, yeah, I think it has to be the offense. I mean, you can't have the worst offense in the league and expect to win anything, especially going out and getting the offensive coordinator you wanted. Yeah, it needs to be a lot better this year.
Julia, how about you?
Yeah. And like you were saying, it does start with the offensive line. We know how frustrating it was to watch last season and season before that. Garantano always getting nailed, whether it's his, him holding on to the ball too long or not, but we know that the offense needs to get better, and it starts with the offensive line.
Yeah, it has to start with the offensive line up front. And we've seen several examples of just Tennessee football over the past few years of how important the offensive line is. It's not going to matter if Jim Chaney is the quarterback whisperer with Garantano. He pulls the 09 Lane Kiffin, the Jonathan Crompton on him, and he all of a sudden has this huge year where he's finally that quarterback that we were promised. He's not holding on to the ball too long. He's making better reads. He's making smarter decisions with the ball. It's not going to matter if he doesn't have time, though.
Yeah.
That's a two-step process there. I'm not a Jarrett Garantano stan. I think the Garantano stans are a little bit too much for me, honestly. I don't know what he has done to deserve a lot of gushing over him. But at the same point, I mean, there's no use in really disliking him.
Sure.
When a lot of that stuff you have to objectively admit is not his fault.
Yeah.
Yep. Offensive line play last year was trash.
It was terrible.
Yep.
I mean, you look at when he does have time to sit there and throw and make all of his reads, what he can do with the ball.
Yes.
And he can be one of the better quarterbacks in the league. If he can get that every down on every snap, he would be a top quarterback. But when you're playing with guys who can't block anything – and you have about a split second to throw the ball and make a read, you're going to look bad.
Yeah, it's going to end up being that offensive side of the ball.
I mean, it has to.
Think about this, too. I think of a more successful team last year. Look at Kentucky last year. Kentucky football, man, for what they've gone through, that was the best team the majority of their football fans had ever seen in their entire lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was the best team they had put on the field statistically, win record-wise, since the 70s.
Yeah.
It was that good. And had a lot of good wins, but you know what they couldn't do? Well, they couldn't win the East.
Yep.
They still couldn't beat Tennessee in Neyland Stadium.
Yeah.
There's a lot of areas they came up short. And you know why they came up short? Their offense outside of Snell was trash. If Snell cannot get it going, Terry Wilson couldn't save them.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't. You saw how dreadful that offense was. If you were at that Tennessee-Kentucky game in Neyland, you saw it right in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
It was
really bad. Kentucky defense, really great. Really great. You had Josh Allen leading the way there. He was tremendous. You had a lot of other great pieces on the defensive side of the ball. But, yeah, were they successful? They went, what, 9-3?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Great for Kentucky standards. They could have done a lot more if they had an offense that wasn't putrid garbage.
Sure.
So that's really what it's going to depend for Tennessee to have more success, in my opinion. Even though, man, I would hate to have the defensive line get torn to shreds.
Yeah.
I hope that defensive line with a lot of the plug-and-play pieces really, really comes through.
Both sides of the ball on the line need to take big steps if Pruitt wants to be here longer than his four-year contract, whatever it was.
Yeah.
They both do, because you have to control the line of scrimmage in the SEC, and if you can't, you're going to get run over, run on by every single team you play.
865-546-8200, 546-8200. Hit another break here. When we return here on Overtime, we got a little bit of an update regarding some booze in Neyland Stadium and TBA, and also a little bit breaking news that came across the timeline regarding some construction work going on I-40 East in the Kodak area there. Tell you about that on the other side. You're listening to Overtime. Keep it right here on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Everybody get up. It's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Here's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. All right.
We have a couple stories regarding some sin and vice in East Tennessee. Woo! Let's get into it here. It's not that serious. One of them, of course, about, man, I loved how the news really broke while I was at Bonnaroo. Something I would have really loved to talk about the day it happened. The beer permit request for Thompson Bowling Arena in Neyland Stadium. The much anticipated probable booze sales that would be going on this upcoming sports season here. A little bit of an update today. This is from WBIR. The city of Knoxville postponed its discussion today on whether to approve beer permit applications for Thompson Bowling Arena and Neyland Stadium. It was set to be discussed today at the Beer Board meeting.
Okay.
I love those public affairs, like city council type of meetings. They have one for everything. Mm-hmm. I had to cover a lot of those when I was in my early journalism classes. Mm-hmm. I had to listen to stuff about like zoning complaints and all that.
It's brutal.
Oh, I'd hate to be someone who had to like cover those. But yeah, there's the Beer Board. But yeah, it's getting postponed today. Wonder why. Let's keep going on talking about this. In order to be approved, a checklist needs to be accurately completed. Not every box needs to be checked to apply, but enough needs to be done to show the company is moving in the right direction. According to the checklist, the board could approve the permit, could approve it pending final documentation, deny it, or defer it. And this all, by the way, the company in question is Aramark, of course. Aramark runs all the concessions at the facilities of Thomas Bowling Arena and Neyland Stadium, and they'll be the ones over the alcohol distribution.
I'm not shocked by that. I'm not shocked that Aramark has a alcohol part of their company. I'm not shocked.
So that answers the question I have when the SEC removed its ban on alcohol sales. I was wondering because Aramark – UT has the contract with Aramark for all the concessions. I didn't know that included alcohol.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that somebody had to go through like Cherokee or somebody like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Eagle, something like that.
One of those people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the answer. So it just got postponed. Hmm. That doesn't really mean anything. It's just not today. You won't know about the beer permit today, but there's. I don't think anybody's worried that this could be denied.
No, I think it's only a matter of time. I mean, Coach Fulmer, I think he had a big hand in it getting passed. And since it is passed, I just don't see Tennessee not partaking in it this season. I would be absolutely shocked if they say no, not this year, maybe next. So I think it's just a matter of time. I do want to know why it got postponed, though. Maybe like somebody couldn't make it, couldn't show up.
I mean, they said stuff about like this checklist. Maybe there was something, some box you didn't check. Hmm. Oh, there's a bureaucratic red tape. It's more of that. But yeah, not worried that anything would get denied here. I mean, the University of Tennessee will make a boatload of money off $10 beers.
Yes, they will.
And how much would like a plastic glass of wine go? Because you can sell wine now too. I would assume they would include like. Some wine. How much would that go for?
I think it might be a little less than the beer because I feel like it typically is at, sporting events. I'd say probably around the $7 or $8 range.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
How bougie do you have to be to get wine at sporting events?
Pretty bougie.
I mean, Sophie Turner, there was a video of Sophie Turner chugging that wine at the Rangers game, but that's a celebrity, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Some people like wine.
That wouldn't be my beverage of choice at a sporting event. No. I just feel like it's not right.
It's out of place, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just very odd. Like, it shouldn't be there, but I'm sure they'll sell it.
Give me my $11 Mick Ultras or give me death.
Yep. There you go.
That's what I'm saying. All right. So the other story here, not sports related, but it could be sports related, depending on what goes up here. This goes to the Mountain Press. Big fan of the Mountain Press. I did work for them back in the fall with football coverage here. But this is on the news side of things. So this is something that had been rumored for a minute.
Okay.
This is something that had been discussed for a while. Official now. The Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians now officially owns land near Smoky Stadium. As county records show in Sevier County, the tribe purchased 122 acres for $7.6 million.
Golly.
This deed was signed on Friday. It shows that the tribe purchased land from the Whaley Group, Greenbrier Whaley Group, Holly Franklin, and KMNA Enterprises. No one at the tribal council's offices responded to messages seeking comment to the story. The Cherokee Budget Council agreed to buy the land at its February the 5th meeting, according to a story from the Cherokee One Feather, the tribe's official newspaper. Hmm. And now it's official. They own the land.
Wow.
They own the land. Land Principal Chief Richard G. Sneed, he told the council the land would make a good investment because they were getting it at a good price for such a prime location. He indicated that they were getting a good value on the land. Much of the land was originally owned by former Sevier County Commissioner Kenneth Whaley. He left it to his grandchildren when he passed away last year. He's also a construction owner. It's located north of Smoky Stadium. It runs between the stadium and the I-40 Industrial Park. It says in this story, it isn't clear what plans the tribe may have for the land. While the General Assembly of the state passed a bill this year that will allow sports betting, Snead said at the time that he wasn't optimistic gambling would be legalized in the state, according to the Cherokee One Feather.
Okay. Wow.
So right now, depending on how quick they're trying to build whatever they're going to build, it may not be a casino.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sevier County, mm-hmm. it's a touristy area.
Yeah.
They can build some type of attraction. And that's really good land right there, right off the exit.
Yeah, it is.
That's going to be really attractive to tourists. You don't have to drive too far down the parkway into that crazy traffic.
Yeah.
Ooh.
What do we think it could be if it's not a casino? Just like
some type of resort. I mean, yeah, they can probably gotta be. I mean, 122 acres, man. You can make something like the Wilderness.
Yeah, you could do a lot with that. Yeah,
I would assume it would be something like that. But man, I think when it comes to the betting now, Tennessee's getting pretty progressive. You had the sports gambling approved this year. Now, gambling, physical locations. Mm-hmm. That's a big step up.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
But you have other like. I mean, you have to bring it up. You do have other Bible Belt states that have brick-and-mortar casinos.
Yeah.
West Virginia has several.
Mississippi has them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it'd be too big of a step for Tennessee to approve that. But that's something that's probably like a few years down the road. But, I mean, they just bought this property. So, like, you're looking at
a while.
Years and years before something's open.
Yeah. I think this is a great move by the Cherokee. I really do. I think they know that eventually gambling, like in-person gambling, not just online, will be legal in Tennessee. Go ahead and have a resort type place, a hotel, something, a restaurant maybe, and then when it gets past, bring in the machines, bring in the tables, and you're ready to go. I think it's smart. They're just getting ready for the inevitable.
That's just something, all this comes down to, look, do you want to make a lot of money or do you not want to?
I do.
So, not only for the eastern band of the Cherokee Indians here, but for Sevier County, for East Tennessee. If you opened up a brick-and-mortar casino, forget about it.
Sure, yeah.
That's already that area is already one of the hottest tourist destinations in the country.
Yeah.
So, add a casino there?
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. Not it could a bad be big.
Idea. And, I mean, it's still a long enough distance away from Harris up in Cherokee to where it wouldn't like take away from... revenue.
I think it could hurt Harris if Tennessee eventually does pass that bill.
I mean, it definitely could because you have everybody from East Tennessee goes up to Harris. Exactly. But, I mean, I'm thinking about how many people from North Carolina, South Carolina does Harris bring in? I don't know the numbers on that.
A good bit. I think it's a great move by them. It's very smart.
Yes or no, will a casino be put up there eventually?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Because sports betting in person will be passed sooner than later. The Cherokee people are apparently a lot smarter than the rest of us because they're going ahead and getting ready to make all these millions of dollars.
They're on
so it. I think it's genius. I really do.
Exit 407, the hub of Western civilization.
Yeah.
With your Bass Pro Shop.
Yep.
Chop House.
Cracker Barrel.
The Smokies.
Flapjacks.
Oh, yeah. Flapjacks.
Boot Barn.
Your big flea market.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got the Mountain Motorsports out there if you're into that.
You got that the jerky store.
Oh, the jerky store. Oh, yeah. And now you may have a casino.
Yeah. I mean, you got everything you need at 407.
Kodak. Really
everything you
Kodak,
need.
Tennessee, man. Just the Paris of Tennessee.
I mean, we got the Smokies there as well. I mean, just build me a house and I will die in Kodak, Tennessee.
865-546-8200. We got Mount Rushmore coming up on the other side. I'm hungry, so we're going to do a food relay Mount Rushmore. It's our Mount Rushmore of pizza toppings on the other side. Stick with us. You're listening to Overtime. Josie's on a vacation far away. All right, back here on Overtime. Last segment of hour number one. So you know how we do it this summer. Every day, all day, is time for our daily Mount Rushmore. Today, we are doing the Mount Rushmore pizza toppings. Who wants to go first?
Let me turn my mic on and I'll go first.
Go ahead, Cole.
Okay. First for me, it's got to be the goat, at least in my mind. Pepperoni. I've always been a big pepperoni fan. The favorite type of meat to put on pizza. Always been my favorite as a child, so definitely number one. Let's see. Number two, I'm just kind of spitballing. Number two, I like the grilled chicken on pizza. The majority of the pizzas I get when I do the Build Your Own, I get pepperoni and then grilled chicken. It's just been as of late, but it's delicious. If you're a meat lover like I am, it's delicious. So grilled chicken number two.
It's always blown my mind how chicken's not a more acceptable pizza topping.
I know.
Yeah.
I think it just makes sense.
It's delicious. The sauce, the cheese, all of it. It's very good. Let's see. Number three, I'll stick with the meats, and I'll go bacon. I like bacon on my pizza too. If I have a little bit of extra cash in my pocket, I'll put the bacon on with my grilled chicken.
It's worth it.
And my pepperoni.
Jeez.
It's worth it.
It's delicious.
All that meat.
It's delicious.
Cole McCormick's cholesterol level skyrocketing.
It is. It is a problem, and I'm taking care of it. But those are my three. And then four, I don't know who's going to like this or not, but just veggies in general. I like veggies on my pizza. I like the Supreme outside of the pepperoni pizza.
No. Pizza. Yeah, I'm sorry. You got to pick one veggie.
Yeah.
Pick one.
One veggie.
What's your favorite veggie?
Green pepper.
Okay.
Green pepper for sure is the best veggie for me.
Okay, fair enough. Julia, you want to go next?
Yeah, I'll go. First up for me is extra cheese. The more the merrier when it comes to cheese on pizza for me. Second, mushrooms. Veggie lover pizzas are my favorite, and I got to have the mushrooms. Green peppers I also had on my list. Again, love the veggie lovers. And I think green peppers are kind of underrated as a pizza
really
topping.
Are.
Super good. And then fourth is pepperoni. I feel like it's the classic pizza topping. Pretty much everybody loves it. It's the goat.
All right. Time for mine here. I'm going to have my first two. It's ones both y'all have said. Pepperoni and mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to do like a two-topping pizza deal, I'm usually going to do pepperoni and mushroom.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just it's classic toppings. And if you hate on pepperoni, you're dumb. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You just can't hate on it. The only time I'll really just eat mushrooms is only on pizza, really.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it comes in like a soup or something like that. I don't know, but it's rare.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where I differentiate.
Okay.
I'm only doing one meat. That's the pepperoni.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
These next two are veggies. This next one, something I really found out I love this past week at Bonnaroo.
Okay.
I told you all about the spicy pie yesterday, that special pizza place they have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have pepperoni on the spicy pie. It's pepperoni, jalapenos, red peppers. So I'm going with jalapenos.
Okay.
Jalapenos, okay. Some people can't handle them. I don't think they're not that spicy.
Yeah.
It's not like habanero peppers.
Sure.
They're not bad. It gets a nice little, flavor profile to it, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
Turns up the heat, turns up the intensity. I don't know. I think I'm going to put jalapenos on my pizzas more regularly now.
Okay.
And my last one. Spinach.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like
spinach on my pizza. Spinach is a superfood.
Mm-hmm.
I like it on a lot of stuff. Hey, spinach on your pizza, man. It's a good way to make you feel better about eating pizza.
Sure.
You don't feel as bad about yourself because you're getting a good amount of veggies.
Yeah.
You get spinach on your pizza, especially, as Julia said, if you get a veggie lover.
Mm-hmm.
Veggie lover pizza, something I've come to love more as an adult.
Yes.
Sure, yeah. Me too.
Vegetables on my pizza when I was a kid, nothing disgusted me more. And now since I'm a grown-up now, I'm an adult, I'm not a picky eater like I used to be. Give me all the veggies on the pizza, except black olives.
Oh no!
You don't like
gotta
black
have
olives?
Black olives.
I don't like them.
I love.
I don't like them. I'm sorry.
I love black olives.
Everything else. By the way, pineapple on pizza? Yes or no? Since we're talking about pizza.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know that's a hot topic.
Yeah.
I wanted to put it as one of my four, but I know I'm going to get heat just from saying yes.
Yeah.
But I do like it. I like the sweet
pineapple
with my,
on pizza.
I like the sweet with my savory, and I don't care who knows it.
That's a topic that divides the nation.
It really does.
It really is, and it is. I'll tell you what. It is sad. Of all the stuff going on these days, we're going to argue about pineapple on pizza. No, thank you. I'm okay. Not arguing. I'm just going
to
eat it.
Okay, I'm not going to argue either, but I have to have my stance. I love pineapples. Mm-hmm. I do love pineapples, man. That's one of my favorite fruits.
I do, too.
I don't prefer them on pizza. I'm sorry.
Okay. I didn't for a long time. I didn't. And then I've just one day, it. I don't know what happened. One day I had it again, and it clicked.
I mean, fair enough. People get weirder things on their pizza. Mm-hmm. I've seen some really weird pizzas. This isn't a weird pizza, but what do you all think about the taco pizzas, like the taco salad pizzas? You know the ones I'm talking about.
They're okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything against them.
Favorite type of dessert pizza, by the way.
Oh, gosh. I guess just like the regular, like, cinnamon. I don't know.
Oh, chocolate chip!
Okay, chocolate chip.
Yeah, chocolate chip.
Fair enough. I'm hungry now. Hour number two of overtime's coming up next. Stay with us. Hiding in a hiding place where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret just around.